perfection. He keeps looking inwards and focusing on his failures and his weaknesses. He sees himself only in negative terms. His memories do not bring him any light, only more condemnation. He could not put into words his sense of lostness. He remembers better times, and it just reinforces a sense of hopelessness. And that's a godly person. And if you go through times like that, don't let anybody say you are a second-class Christian. Jesus died for all of us, particularly the broken, the despairing, and those who feel hopeless. But there is a misdiagnosis going on here. There's a misdiagnosis of the situation. He assumes, and this is where we've got the medic apologies written. Imagine we've got someone else who's Googling wrong symptoms here. He assumes God's presence has gone. God has rejected him because he cannot feel the joy of the Lord at all. He does not sense the blessing and the comfort of the Lord of the universe. So he assumes God has abandoned him. It's a natural response. A natural response with any disappointment or broken dream. An understandable interpretation of the brokenness we can feel living in this world which is out of step with its maker. It is not that God's presence has gone. God is with us. Just sometimes it's hard to feel him, hard to know him. God is with us in the darkness and pain. He is especially with us in the darkness and pain. His presence is always there. His son, Jesus, went through the isolation of all history, as which we will remember later in bread and wine, when he descended into hell. And these things are often beyond our comprehension, because sometimes we don't realize the evil that God is seeking to overturn. Our assumptions need adjustment. We need to know that God is always with us, and we need to keep telling us that even when we don't feel it. God is with us in our pain and our despair. He doesn't always prevent them. And that is a tough question. Peter has to say to the early church, don't be surprised at the fiery ordeal you are facing as though something strange were happening, but rejoice that you share in the suffering of Christ. Haven't quite got that one yet, to rejoice when it's tough. We try, we say the words. But this is a reminder not to project onto God our false assumptions, our ignorance. God's presence has not gone, he's always with us. But our feelings and our circumstances may make it very hard to know God in the way we might like. But then if God's one misdiagnosis is that God's presence has gone, the second is that God has not kept his word, verse 8. His promise has failed for all times. Is his love worn threadbare? Has his salvation promise burnt out? All that the psalmist based his life on seemed to be crumbling. It all seems to be falling off the cliff. All that he believed and trusted in, God's faithfulness and blessing, seems to mock him and to taunt him. Like the child who feels that the parent does not love her anymore because she's not allowed to have a puppy. It seems the most unjust and unkind thing any parent can possibly do. If the parent really loved, she thinks, they would understand the desperate need for a pet. In our misery and pain, it is easy for us to think that God has not kept his word. That if he kept his word, you wouldn't be feeling this pain. Our perspective is flawed. We do not see as God sees. His plans are for more than just our comfort. And God sees the spiritual dynamics of the kingdom of darkness and the work of Satan to destabilize us and to keep us oppressed by our circumstances and situations. And ministers are not immune from this. Do you remember the vicar in Bristol whose daughter died, I think, in one of the London bombs, Julie Nicholson and her daughter Jenny? She had to resign from ministry in the end because she couldn't forgive the bombers and she couldn't understand where God was in it. It's understandable, isn't it? And then the third misdiagnosis is that God's love is over, verse 9. Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in his anger withheld his compassion? This is a common response to personal trauma and disappointments and discouragements, and we're made to question the very foundations of our thinking and our faith. Perhaps God isn't always merciful. Perhaps actually God is not a nice God or a good God as I thought. Doesn't feel it at the moment. Or maybe we feel that God is angry with me because I was dishonest, selfish, proud, unloving. Fill in the gaps for yourself, whatever your personal issue or weakness might be. Depending on your upbringing and personality, you will judge God's love for you by how well things seem to work out. If you are successful, then you will think God's love is amazing for you. If you see many amazing answers to prayer and miracles, you will say that God's love is being revealed. If you have emotional stability and basic joy and happiness, you'll feel you're loved. But if things go in a way that make you wonder, maybe you can't have children, maybe you never married, maybe you're in deep debt, maybe you have issues of addiction or destructive patterns of behavior that you just can't leave behind, then it may feel as if God's love is over. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to meet some of the Karen people in a refugee camp on the Thai-Burma border. And what is happening to the Rohingya Muslims at the moment in Burma happened in previous decades to the Karen and many of the villages in the hills and mountains of Burma. The military just chased them, killing them, shooting them. And there in the refugee camp, the Christian community all had stories of families who had been shot and killed. And there was a large orphanage all of them had family members who had died. And some of them had bullet holes to show me where it had happened. And yet they never felt God's love was over. They never felt that God had abandoned them. And it is an interesting thought that those who come out of the most violent and aggressive situations of war, injustice, genocide, rape, you might expect them to be the most dismissive of God and his love. And yet they are often the ones who can see most clearly the evil in the hands of humanity. They are even more aware of the truth of God's promises and love, his constant presence with them, even in the horror and nightmare of all they face. Those who came as refugees from Rwanda, amazing stories of God's light and love and grace in the background of huge horror. And yet there is a very persuasive argument today articulated by people like Stephen Fry, who actually say God cannot be love. Do you remember Stephen Fry, the media personality, the great intellect, made a passionate and persuasive argument for not believing in God and his love? He spoke of the suffering of innocent children and used the most stomach-churning examples to illustrate his argument. He said, if God allows that, then I do not wish to worship him. That is not an all-powerful, all-loving, all-knowing God. That is a monster, he said. You see, Fry's, and I respect his intellect hugely, Stephen Fry's wrong assumption is that he understands everything. In his intellectual understanding, he assumes that his thinking is the center of the universe and that what he sees is the whole picture. I could not defend God, but I can say that as in Job, God had purposes way beyond Job could understand. We live in a world that God created perfect and humanity has messed up big time. There is no reason today why young children should die of horrendous disease and affliction. But we choose to use our resources selfishly. In a world with no potential for pain and suffering, there would be no potential for good. If my words, actions, and behavior could never, ever hurt you, then my words and actions could never show love and kindness either. Oh, it's complex. I could do a whole hour on that. I love this kind of philosophy of suffering a bit, and I could get... It's complex, but it is important to wrestle with these issues and to know God in them. Otherwise, our faith is only ever a fair-weather faith, and the world is not often that fair on people. We need to have a faith that can give people answers to the struggles and the battles and the issues they face. But let's move on to more positive ground. The cure. The remedy lies in regaining a true perspective of God, of who he is. Remembering, and do you know, one of the things I feel this year is reminding you to have a big vision of God and have to have great expectations of what God can do in you and through you. Have very small expectations of yourself. We are hopeless and helpless. But God in us, the hope of glory. God has revealed himself, saying and repeating again, until we live in the reality of all that God is. And so verses 11 and 12 say, the first part of the cure is remembering all that God has done. Remembering the miracles of God. Remembering, as the psalmist did, the Red Sea parting, the provision of manna and quail, the establishment of King David and King Solomon. They were truly amazing periods of history. Remember God. God has not changed. God can still do more than we think or imagine. And we would do well to remember answered prayers, God's faithfulness and provision in many situations, his strength and care for us, so that in the dark moments of fear and anxiety and depression, there is light. Maybe only a glimmer of light, but then there is light. And then the second part of the cure is to remember who God is. Not just what he's done, remember the character of God, verse 13. God in his holiness, that pure and sacred, dazzling presence before which we feel grubby and inadequate. And yet in that holiness, which includes themes of beauty and creativity, color, life, compassion, like a brilliant diamond with fire at the center of it, so it seems as though it's alive. That is who God is, sending out his laser beams of light, which heal and affirm and forgive, God's holiness, which is perfect justice, kindness, mercy, as well as pristine compassion. Remember who God is. And then remember God's power to save. Verse 15. God, the Redeemer and Protector, the one who is in the business of saving people from themselves, enabling them to be the person they are created to be. You are created to be beautiful, handsome if you prefer that, before God amongst each other. And I love these words in Isaiah. Our God does this as a bruised reed he will not break. A smouldering wick he won't put out. So if you are feeling on the very edge of faith, God will hold on to you. Because if you're bruised and broken, God will hold you and keep you. He won't say, you're broken and that no good. He came to save you in your brokenness. If you're smouldering, if you're a wick that's about to go out, let the Spirit breathe life into you, so that you might ignite again into all that God has for you. Where there is the slightest possibility of God rescuing and supporting, he will do so. Whether it's the nation of Israel or the Gentiles, individuals of all backgrounds, remember the power of God. And then verses 16 to 19 is remember God, the author of creation. I saw some beautiful views as I drove up the M1, and I just looked as though, you know, icing sugar had been scattered everywhere. And sometimes some of you will be reminded of God's beauty and glory as you simply walk and see God's creation. And these verses 16 to 19 talks about creation pointing us to God, honoring God. The ocean saw you in action, God, saw you and trembled. The deep ocean was scared to death. Clouds belched buckets of rain. The sky exploded with thunder. From whirlwind came your thundering voice. Lightning exposed the world. Earth reeled and rocked. You strode through the ocean, walk straight through. That is our God with authority over creation. And yet, verse 20, with the tenderness of God as a shepherd, he is the one who cares for us. We've already heard a bit of Psalm 23 this morning. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. One of the privileges of being president is that BMS have sent me overseas, and they sent me to Mizoram in North India and Kathmandu in Nepal. And I have to say it was the most challenging, demanding, and out of my comfort zone time I have ever had. And if a sense, well, I'm not sure what the opposite of a cherry on the cake is, I got bitten by a dog in Kathmandu the day before I was leading a retreat for the BMS workers. And I remember that day because the antibiotics I'd been prescribed, really the side effects were worse than the dog bite by far. And I remember thinking, Lord, I cannot do this. I felt anxious, worried, despairing. And God, and you know, I just kept saying, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. And then I thought, like, just get through 1 hour, and then get through the next hour, and then get through the next hour. And God keeps us. And now whenever I'm feeling under a bit of pressure, I think, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. And I look back to Kathmandu, and actually the hilarious thing there was you looked out the window and you could see the mountains. It wasn't quite the Himalayas, but it was almost. And you just, and then I would read Psalm 121. I look mine eyes to the hills, and where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord. We need to keep holding on and reminding ourselves of God holding us and keeping us. And so finally, the repeat prescription. What is the prescription that you need? Well, this week, I got new glasses. Rightly or wrongly, I'm not sure I like them. I did like them at the time, but I can see better now. So that's a good thing, isn't it? And that's what glasses are about. It's not about vanity. It's about my eyes had got lazy, and they weren't doing the job that they needed. And I want to ask you, maybe spiritually, we need new lenses to sharpen our focus, to see God and all he is doing more clearly. This psalm asks us to think about how we see our lives. We will struggle. We will struggle with God, but we must have our lenses, just see them through those and see our lives and through the lens of God himself. Who God is. That is the focal point of our faith, not the circumstances that surround you, but God himself. And as you go out and share good news, you don't have anything to change people's circumstances. All you have is the good news of Jesus. But the great thing is the good news of Jesus has power to transform lives. But the problem for all of us is that the lens gets grubby, doesn't it? We've replaced the lens of Scripture with the lens of our daily newspaper. And so we kind of think actually what the newspaper says. And frankly, I'm almost giving up on watching the news. It makes me so anxious. You know, if it's not Brexit or Russians or whatever else, you know, and I have to keep coming back and saying, no, Jesus is Lord. And I think the media winds it all up anyhow, but that's another. The Bible, the lens of the Bible recommends over and over that what it's about, seek first the kingdom of God. And everything else will be given to you. Put God first. Make God first. Keep Jesus as Lord. Honor God. Know God. Seek him always. Oh, and there'll still be times of discouragement. There'll still be times of grief and loss and maybe even depression. But there will be God upholding you and the truth of God maintaining you. May your kingdom come as in heaven. Yes, we should keep praying that. We should pray it often. We should pray that God will reign and rule within us as a community, within us as individually, and that God will continue to bring life and hope. But we should know that there are dark times, and the people we go to face dark times. And you know, sometimes as Brits, we have our stiff upper lip, and we don't admit anything, do we? And we've got to start being a bit more real and saying, I need you to pray for me. On Thursday, it was Baptist Council, and we'd done loads of business, and everybody seemed very kind of together. And then in the last session, we're in little groups praying for each other. And the three people shared very deep needs. And sometimes we're not very good at saying, I need Jesus to make a difference in my life. God is transforming us. And in the process, it may be very tough. But one day God's kingdom will come fully. And one day we will see God's kingdom fully on earth as in heaven. I just want to finish with a quote from one of our Baptist theologians. I think about heaven on earth. I think about love that cannot be conquered. I think about justice that will not be denied. I think about joy that can never be repressed. And I think about an incomprehensible future when justice and joy will reign. I think about the passionate kiss of righteousness and peace. And I pray, may your kingdom come on earth as in heaven. We're going to sing in a moment. I think when I survey the wondrous cross, the musicians could come and join me, if that would be great. We're going to share bread and wine. Everywhere I've gone, I've anointed, given people an opportunity to be anointed with oil, just to remind them to remember who God is, to remind them that they are loved by God. And after communion, when we sing the final song, if you would like simply to be anointed, and I will simply say, may you know God's grace. Whatever your situation is, we all need it. I need it. But let's stand together and worship God as we sing When I Survey the Wondrous Cross.